and started tearing it into little pieces while I thought about his question. When I was 10, my mother got me a subscription to a website called Seeds Anonymous, I said. Every month, I would get an unmarked package of seeds in the mail with instructions on how to plant them and care for them. I wouldn't know what I was growing until it came up out of the ground. Every day after school, I'd run straight to the backyard to see the progress. It gave me something to look forward to. Growing things felt like a reward. I could feel Atlas staring at me when he asked, "A reward for what?" I shrugged. "For loving my plants the right way. Plants reward you based on the amount of love you show them. If you're cruel to them or neglect them, they give you nothing. But if you care for them and love them the right way, they reward you with gifts in the form of vegetables or fruits or flowers." I looked down at the weed I was tearing apart in my hands, and there was barely an inch left of it. I wadded it up between my fingers and flicked it. I didn't want to look over at Atlas because I could still feel him staring, so instead I just stared out over my mulch-covered garden. "We're just alike," he said. My eyes flicked to his. "Me and you?" He shook his head. "No. Plants and humans. Plants need to be loved the right way in order to survive. So do humans. We rely on our parents from birth to love us enough to keep us alive. And if our parents show us the right kind of love, we turn out as better humans overall. But if we're neglected..." His voice grew quiet, almost sad. He wiped his hands on his knees, trying to get some of the dirt off. "If we're neglected, we end up homeless and incapable of anything meaningful." His words made my heart feel like the mulch he had just laid out. I didn't even know what to say to that. Does he really think that about himself? He acted like he was about to get up, but before he did, I said his name. He sat back down in the grass. I pointed at the row of trees that lined the fence to the left of the yard. "You see that tree over there?" In the middle of the row of trees was an oak tree that stood taller than all the rest of the trees. Atlas glanced over at it and dragged his eyes all the way up to the top of the tree. "It grew on its own," I said. "Most plants do need a lot of care to survive, but some things, like trees, are strong enough to do it by just relying on themselves and nobody else." I had no idea if he knew what I was trying to say without me coming out and saying it, but I just wanted him to know that I thought he was strong enough to survive whatever was going on in his life. I didn't know him well, but I could tell he was resilient, way more than I would ever be if I were in his situation. His eyes were glued to the tree. It was a long time before he even blinked. When he finally did, he just nodded a little and looked down at the grass. I thought with the way his mouth twitched that he was about to frown, but instead he actually smiled a little. Seeing that smile made my heart feel like I had just startled it right out of a dead sleep. "We're just alike," he said, repeating himself from earlier. "Plants and humans?" I asked. He shook his head. "No. Me and you." I gasped, Ellen. I hope he didn't notice, but I definitely sucked in a rush of air. Because what the heck was I supposed to say to that? I just sat there, really awkward and quiet, until he stood up. He turned like he was about to walk home. "Atlas, wait." He glanced back down at me. I pointed at his hands and said, "You might want to take a quick shower before you go back. Compost is made from cow manure." He lifted his hands and looked down at them, and then he looked down at his compost-covered clothes.
"Cow manure? Seriously?"
I grinned and nodded. He laughed a little, and then before I knew it, he was on the ground next to me, wiping his hands all over me. We were both laughing as he reached to the bag next to us and stuck his hand inside, then smeared it down my arms. "Ellen, I am confident that the next sentence I am about to write has never been written or spoken aloud before. When he was wiping that cow shit on me, it was, quite possibly, the most turned on I have ever been." After a few minutes, we were both lying on the ground, breathing hard, still laughing. He finally stood up and pulled me to my feet, knowing he couldn't waste minutes if he wanted a shower before my parents came home. Once he was in the shower, I washed my hands in the sink and just stood there, wondering what he meant earlier when he said we were just alike. Was it a compliment? It sure felt like one. Was he saying that he thought I was strong too? Because I certainly didn't feel strong most of the time. In that moment, just thinking about him made me feel weak. I wondered what I was going to do about the way I was starting to feel when I was around him. I also wondered how long I can keep hiding him from my parents, and how long he'll be staying at that house. Winters in Maine are unbearably cold, and he won't survive without a heater. Or blankets. I gathered myself and went in search of all of the spare blankets I could find. I was going to give them to him when he got out of the shower, but it was already 5 and he left in a hurry. I'll give them to him tomorrow. Lily. Dear Ellen, Harry Connick Jr. is freaking hilarious. I'm not sure if you've ever had him on your show because I hate to admit I've probably missed an episode or two since you've been on the air, but if you've never had him, you should. Actually, have you ever watched Late Night with Conan O'Brien? He has this guy named Andy who sits on the couch for every episode. I wish Harry could sit on your couch for every episode. He just has the best one-liners, and the two of you together would be epic. I just want to say thank you. I know that you don't have a show on TV for the sole purpose of making me laugh, but sometimes it feels that way. Sometimes my life just makes me feel like I've lost the ability to laugh or smile, but then I turn on your show, and no matter what mood I'm in when I turn on the TV, I always feel better by the time your show is over. So yeah, thanks for that. I know you probably want an update on Atlas, and I'll give you one in a second, but first, I need to tell you about what happened yesterday. My mother is a teaching assistant over at Brimer Elementary. It's a bit of a drive, and that's why she never gets home until around 5 o'clock. My dad works 2 miles from here, so he is always home right after 5. We have a garage, but only one car can fit in it because of all my dad's stuff. My dad keeps his car in the garage, and my mom keeps her car in the driveway. Well, yesterday, my mom got home a little bit early. Atlas was still at the house, and we were almost finished watching your show when I heard the garage door start to open. He ran out the back door, and I rushed around the living room cleaning up our soda cans and snacks. It had started snowing really hard around lunchtime yesterday, and my mother had a lot of stuff to carry in, so she pulled up in the garage so she could bring it all in through the kitchen door. It was work stuff and a few groceries. I was helping her bring everything inside when my dad pulled up in the driveway. He started honking his horn because he was mad that my mom was parked in the garage. I guess he didn't want to have to get out of his car in the snow. It's the only thing I can think of that would make him want her to move her car right then and there instead of just waiting until she was finished unloading it. Come to think of it, why does my father always get the garage? You would think a man wouldn't want the woman he loves to get the shittier parking spot. Anyway, my mother got that real scared look in her eye when he started honking, and she told me to take all her stuff to the table while she moved her car out. I'm not sure what happened when she went back outside. I heard a crash, and then I heard her scream, so I ran to the garage thinking maybe she had slipped on ice. Ellen, I don't even want to describe what happened next. I'm still a little shocked by the whole thing. I opened the garage door and didn't see my mom. I just saw my dad behind the car doing something. I took a step closer and realized why I couldn't see my mom. He had her pushed down on the hood with his hands around her throat. He was choking her, Ellen. I might cry just thinking about it. He was yelling at her, staring down at her with so much hatred. Something about not having respect for how hard he works. I don't know why he was mad, really, because all I could hear was her silence while she struggled to breathe. The next few minutes are a blur, but I know I started screaming at him. I jumped on his back, and I was hitting him on the side of his head. Then I wasn't. I don't really know what happened, but I'm guessing he threw me off of him. I just remembered one second I was on his back, and the next second I was on the ground, and my forehead hurt like you wouldn't believe. My mom was sitting next to me, holding my head and telling me she was sorry. I looked around for my dad, but he wasn't there. He'd gotten into his car and drove off after I hit my head. My mom gave me a rag and told me to hold it to my head because it was bleeding, and then she helped me to her car and drove me to the hospital. On the way there, she only said one thing to me. When they ask you what happened, tell them you slipped on the ice. When she said that, I just looked out my window and started crying. Because I thought for sure this was the final straw, that she would leave him now that he had hurt me. That was the moment I realized that she'd never leave him. I felt so defeated, but I was too scared to say anything to her about it. I had to get 9 stitches in my forehead. I'm still not sure what I hit my head on, but it doesn't really matter. The fact is, my father was the reason I was hurt, and he didn't even stay and check on me. He just left us both there on the floor of the garage and left. I got home really late last night and fell right to sleep because they had given me some kind of pain pill. This morning, when I walked to the bus, I tried not to look directly at Atlas so he wouldn't see my forehead. I had fixed my hair so that you couldn't really see it, and he didn't notice right away. When we sat down next to each other on the bus, our hands touched when we were putting our stuff on the floor. His hands were like ice, Ellen. Ice. And that's when I realized that I forgot to give him the blankets I had pulled out for him yesterday because my mother got home sooner than I expected. The incident in the garage sort of took over all my thoughts, and I completely forgot about him. It had snowed and iced all night, and he had been over there at that house in the dark all by himself. Now he was so cold, I didn't know how he was even functioning. I grabbed both of his hands in mine and said, "Atlas, you're freezing." He didn't say anything. I just started rubbing his hands in mine to warm them up. I laid my head on his shoulder, and then I did the most embarrassing thing. I just started to cry. I don't cry very much, but I was still so upset by what happened yesterday, and then I was feeling so guilty that I forgot to take him blankets, and it all hit me right there on the ride to school. He didn't say anything. He just pulled his hands from mine so I'd stop rubbing them, and then he laid his hands on top of mine. We just sat there like that the whole ride to school, with our heads leaned together and his hands on top of mine. I might have thought it was sweet, if it wasn't so sad. On the ride home from school is when he finally noticed my head. Honestly, I had forgotten about it. No one at school even asked me about it, and when he sat down next to me on the bus, I wasn't even trying to hide it with my hair. He looked right at me and said, "What happened to your head?" I didn't know what to say to him. I just touched it with my fingers and then looked out the window. I've been trying to get him to trust me more in hopes he would tell me why he doesn't have a place to live, so I didn't want to lie to him. I just didn't want to tell him the truth either. When the bus started moving, he said, "Yesterday, after I left your house, I heard something going on over there. I heard yelling. I heard you scream, and then I saw your father leave. I was going to come check on you to make sure everything was okay, but as I was walking over, I saw you leaving in the car with your mother." He must have heard the fight in the garage and saw her leaving to take me to get the stitches. I couldn't believe he came over to our house. Do you know what my dad would do to him if he saw him wearing his clothes? I got so worried for him because I don't think he knows what my father is capable of. I looked at him and said, "Atlas, you can't do that. You can't come to my house when my parents are home." Atlas got real quiet and then said, "I heard you scream, Lily." He said it like me being in danger trumped anything else. I felt bad because I know he was just trying to help, but that would have made things so much worse. "I fell," I said to him. As soon as I said it, I felt bad for lying. And to be honest, he looked a little disappointed in me, because I think we both knew in that moment that it wasn't as simple as a fall. Then he pulled up the sleeve of his shirt and held out his arm. Ellen, my stomach dropped. It was so bad. All over his arm, he had these small scars. Some of the scars looked just like someone had stuck a cigarette to his arm and held it there. He twisted his arm around so I could see that it was on the other side, too.
I used to fall a lot, too, Lily.
Then he pulled his shirt sleeve down and didn't say anything else. For a second, I wanted to tell him it wasn't like that, that my dad never hurts me and that he was just trying to get me off of him. But then I realized I'd be using the same excuses my mom uses. I felt a little embarrassed that he knows what goes on at my house. I spent the whole rest of the bus ride looking out the window because I didn't know what to say to him. When we got home, my mom's car was there, in the driveway, of course, not the garage. That meant Atlas couldn't come over and watch your show with me. I was going to tell him I would bring him blankets later, but when he got off the bus, he didn't even tell me bye. He just started walking down the street like he was mad. It's dark now, and I'm waiting on my parents to go to sleep. But in a little while, I'm going to take him some blankets. Lily. Dear Ellen, I'm in way over my head. Do you ever do things you know are wrong but are somehow also right? I don't know how to put it in simpler terms than that. I mean, I'm only 15, and I certainly shouldn't have boys spending the night in my bedroom. But if a person knows someone needs a place to stay, isn't it that person's responsibility as a human to help them? Last night, after my parents went to sleep, I snuck out the back door to take Atlas those blankets. I took a flashlight with me because it was dark. It was still snowing really hard, so by the time I made it to that house, I was freezing. I beat on the back door, and as soon as he opened it, I pushed past him to get out of the cold. Only, I didn't get out of the cold. Somehow, it felt even colder inside that old house. I still had my flashlight on, and I shined it around the living room and kitchen. There wasn't anything in there, Ellen. No couch, no chair, no mattress. I handed the blankets off to him and kept looking around me. There was a big hole in the roof over the kitchen, and wind and snow were just pouring in. When I shined my light around the living room, I saw his stuff in one of the corners. His backpack, plus the backpack I'd given him. There was a little pile of other stuff I'd given him, like some of my dad's clothes. And then there were two towels on the floor. One I guess he laid on and one he covered up with. I put my hand over my mouth because I was so horrified. He'd been there living like that for weeks. Atlas put his hand on my back and tried to walk me back out the door.
You shouldn't be over here, Lily, he said. You could get in trouble.
That's when I grabbed his hand and said, You shouldn't be here either. I started to pull him out the front door with me, but he yanked his hand back. That's when I said, You can sleep on my floor tonight. I'll keep my bedroom door locked. You can't sleep here, Atlas. It's too cold and you'll get pneumonia and die. He looked like he didn't know what to do. I'm sure the thought of being caught in my bedroom was just as scary as getting pneumonia and dying. He looked back at his spot in the living room and then he just nodded his head once and said, Okay. So you tell me, Ellen, was I wrong letting him sleep in my room last night? It doesn't feel wrong. It felt like the right thing to do. But I sure would get in a lot of trouble if we had been caught. He slept on the floor, so it's not like it was anything more than me just giving him somewhere warm to sleep. I did learn a little more about him last night. After I snuck him in the back door into my room, I locked my door and made a pallet for him on the floor next to my bed. I set the alarm for 6 a.m. and told him he'd have to get up and leave before my parents woke up, since sometimes my mom wakes me up in the mornings. I crawled in my bed and scooted over to the edge of it so I could look down at him while we talked for a little while. I asked him how long he thought he might stay there, and he said he didn't know. That's when I asked him how he ended up there. My lamp was still on and we were whispering, but he got real quiet when I said that. He just stared up at me with his hands behind his head for a moment. Then he said, "I don't know my real dad. He never had anything to do with me. It's always just been me and my mom, but she got remarried about 5 years ago to a guy who never really liked me much. We fought a lot. When I turned 18 a few months ago, we got in a big fight, and he kicked me out of the house." He took a deep breath like he didn't want to tell me anymore. But then he started talking again. "I've been staying with a friend of mine and his family since then, but his dad got a transfer to Colorado and they moved. They couldn't take me with them, of course. His parents were just being nice by letting me stay with them, and I knew that, so I told them I talked to my mom and that I was moving back home. The day they left, I didn't have anywhere to go. So I went back home and told my mom I'd like to move back in until I graduated. She wouldn't let me. Said it would upset my stepfather." He turned his head and looked at the wall. "So I just wandered around for a few days until I saw that house. Figured I would just stay there until something better came along or until I graduated. I'm signed up to go to the Marines come May, so I'm just trying to hang on until then."
May is 6 months away, Ellen. 6. I had tears in my eyes when he finished telling me all that. I asked him why he didn't just ask someone if they could help him. He said he tried, but it's harder for an adult than a kid, and he's already 18. He said someone gave him a number for some shelters who might help him. There were 3 shelters in a 20-mile radius of our town, but 2 of them were for battered women. The other one was a homeless shelter. They only had a few beds, and it was just too far away for him to walk there if he wanted to go to school every day. Plus, you have to wait in a long line to try and get a bed. He said he tried it once, but he feels safer in that old house than he did at the shelter. Like the naive girl I am when it comes to situations like this, I said, "But aren't there other options? Can't you just tell the school counselor what your mom did?" He shook his head and said he's too old for foster care. He's 18, so his mother can't get in trouble for not allowing him to go back home. He said he called about getting food stamps last week, but he didn't have a ride or money to get to his appointment. Not to mention he doesn't have a car, so he can't very well find a job. He said he's been looking, though. After he leaves my house in the afternoons, he goes and applies at places, but he doesn't have an address or a phone number to put down on the applications, so that makes it harder for him. I swear, Ellen, every question I threw at him, he had an answer for. It's like he's tried everything not to be stuck in the situation he's in, but there isn't enough help out there for people like him. I got so mad at his whole situation. I told him he was crazy for wanting to go into the military. I wasn't so much whispering when I said, "Why in the heck would you want to serve a country that has allowed you to end up in this kind of situation?" You know what he said next, Ellen? His eyes grew sad, and he said, "It's not this country's fault. My mother doesn't give a shit about me." Then he reached up and turned off my lamp. "Good night, Lily," he said. I didn't sleep much after that. I was too mad. I'm not even sure who I'm mad at. I just kept thinking about our country and the whole world and how screwed up it is that people don't do more for each other. I don't know when humans started only looking out for themselves. Maybe it's always been this way. It made me wonder how many people out there were just like Atlas. It made me wonder if there were other kids at our school who might be homeless. I go to school every day and internally complain about it most of the time, but I've never once thought that school might be the only home some kids have. It's the only place Atlas can go and know he'll have food. I'll never be able to respect rich people now, knowing they willingly choose to spend their money on materialistic things rather than using it to help other people. No offense, Ellen. I know you're rich, but I guess I'm not referring to people like you. I've seen all the stuff you've done for others on your show and all the charities you support. But I know there are a lot of rich people out there who are selfish. Hell, there are even selfish poor people. And selfish middle-class people. Look at my parents. We aren't rich, but we certainly aren't too poor to help other people. Yet, I don't think my dad has ever done anything for a charity. I remember one time we were walking into a grocery store and an old man was ringing a bell for the Salvation Army. I asked my dad if we could give him some money and he told me no, that he works hard for his money and he wasn't about to let me give it away. He said it isn't his fault that other people don't want to work. He spent the whole time we were in the grocery store telling me about how people take advantage of the government, and until the government stops helping those people by giving them handouts, the problem won't ever go away. Ellen, I believed him. That was 3 years ago, and all this time I thought homeless people were homeless because they were lazy or drug addicts or just didn't want to work like other people. But now I know that's not true. Sure, some of what he said was true to an extent, but he was using the worst-case scenarios. Not everyone is homeless because they choose to be. They're homeless because there isn't enough help to go around. And people like my father are the problem. Instead of helping others, people use the worst-case scenarios to excuse their own selfishness and greed. I'll never be like that. I swear to you, when I grow up, I'm going to do everything I can to help other people. I'll be like you, Ellen. Just probably not as rich. Lily. Chapter 9. I dropped the journal on my chest. I'm surprised to feel tears running down my cheeks. Every time I pick up this journal, I think I'll be fine, that it all happened so long ago and I won't still feel what I felt back then. I'm such a sap. It gives me this longing to hug so many people from my past, especially my mother, because for the past year, I haven't really thought about everything she had to go through before my father died. I know it probably still hurts her. I grab my phone to call her and look at the screen. There are 4 missed texts from Ryle. My heart immediately skips. I can't believe I had it on silent. Then I roll my eyes, annoyed with myself because I should not be this excited. Ryle.
Are you asleep?
Ryle.
I guess so.
Ryle.
Lily.
Ryle. Sad face. The sad face was sent 10 minutes ago. I hit reply and type, nope, not asleep. About 10 seconds later, I get another text. Ryle.
Good. I'm walking up your stairs right now. Be there in 20 seconds.
I grin and jump out of bed. I go to the bathroom and check my face. Good enough. I run to the front door and open it as soon as Ryle makes it up the stairwell. He practically drags himself up the top step and then stops to rest when he finally reaches my door. He looks so tired. His eyes are red and there are dark circles under them. His arms slip around my waist and he pulls me to him, burying his face in my neck.
You smell so good, he says.
I pull him inside the apartment. Are you hungry? I can make you something to eat. He shakes his head as he wrestles out of his jacket, so I skip the kitchen and head for the bedroom. He follows me and then throws his jacket over the back of the chair. He kicks off his shoes and pushes them against the wall. He's wearing scrubs. You look exhausted, I say. He smiles and puts his hands on my hips.
I am. I just assisted in an 18-hour surgery.
He bends down and kisses the heart tattoo on my collarbone. No wonder he's exhausted. How is that even possible? I say. 18 hours? He nods and then walks me to the side of the bed where he pulls me down next to him. We adjust ourselves until we're facing each other, sharing a pillow.
Yeah, but it was amazing. Groundbreaking. They'll write about it in medical journals, and I got to be there, so I'm not complaining. I'm just really tired.
I lean in and give him a peck on the mouth. He brings his hand to the side of my head and pulls back.
I know you're probably ready to have hot, sweaty sex, but I don't have the energy tonight. I'm sorry, but I've missed you, and for some reason I sleep better when I sleep next to you. Is it okay that I'm here?
I smile. It's more than okay. He leans in and kisses my forehead. He grabs my hand and then holds it between us on the pillow. His eyes close, but I keep mine open and stare at him. He has the type of face that people shy away from because you could get lost in it. And to think, I get to look at this face all the time. I don't have to be modest and look away, because he's mine. Maybe. This is a trial run. I have to remember that. After a minute, he releases my hand and begins to flex his fingers. I look down at his hand and wonder what that must be like, to have to stand for so long and use your fine motor skills for 18 hours straight. I can't think of much else that would match that level of exhaustion. I slide out of the bed and retrieve some lotion out of my bathroom. I go back to the bed and sit cross-legged next to him. I squirt some lotion on my hand and then pull his arm to my lap. He opens his eyes and looks up at me.
"What are you doing?"
he mumbles. "Shh, go back to sleep," I say. I press my thumbs into the palm of his hand and rotate them upward and then out. His eyes fall shut and he groans into the pillow. I continue massaging his hand for about 5 minutes before switching to his other hand. He keeps his eyes closed the whole time. When I'm finished with his hands, I roll him onto his stomach and straddle his back. He assists me in pulling off his shirt, but his arms are like noodles. I massage his shoulders and his neck and his back and his arms. When I'm finished, I roll off of him and lie down beside him. I'm running my fingers through his hair and massaging his scalp when he opens his eyes.
"Lily,"
he whispers, looking at me sincerely,
"you just might be the best thing that's ever happened to me."
Those words wrap around me like a warm blanket. I don't know what to say in response. He lifts a hand and gently cups my cheek, and I feel his stare deep in my stomach. Slowly, he leans forward and presses his lips to mine. I expect a peck, but he doesn't pull back. The tip of his tongue slides across my lips, parting them softly. His mouth is so warm, I moan as his kiss grows deeper. He rolls me onto my back and then drags his hand down my body straight to my hip. He moves closer, sliding his hand down my thigh. He pushes against me, and a surge of heat shoots inside me. I grab a fistful of his hair and whisper against his mouth, "I think we've waited long enough. I would very much like for you to fuck me now." He practically growls with a renewed sense of energy and begins to pull my shirt off. It becomes an interlude of hands and moans and tongues and sweat. I feel like this is the first time I've ever been touched by a man. The few who came before him were all boys, nervous hands and timid mouths. But Ryle is all confidence. He knows exactly where to touch me and exactly how to kiss me. The only time he's not giving my body his undivided attention is when he reaches to the floor and fishes a condom out of his wallet. Once he's back under the covers and the condom is in place, he doesn't even hesitate. He takes me brazenly in one swift thrust, and I gasp into his mouth, every muscle in me tensing. His mouth is fierce and needy, kissing me everywhere he can reach. I grow so dizzy I can do nothing but succumb to him. He's unapologetic in the way he fucks me. His hand comes between my headboard and the top of my head as he pushes harder and harder, the bed crashing against the wall with every push. My fingernails dig into the skin of his back as he buries his face against my neck. "Ryle," I whisper. "Oh, God," I say. "Ryle," I scream. And then I bite down on his shoulder to muffle every sound that comes after it. My whole body feels it, from my head to my toes and back up again. I'm afraid I might literally pass out for a moment, so I tighten my legs around him and he tenses.
"Jesus, Lily."
His body ripples with tremors and he shoves against me one last time. He groans, stilling himself on top of me. His body jerks with his release, and my head falls back against the pillow. It's a full minute before either of us is able to move. And even then, we choose not to. He presses his face into the pillow and lets out a deep sigh.
I can't.
He pulls back and looks down at me. His eyes are full of something. I don't know what. He presses his lips to mine and then says,
You were so right.
About what? He slowly pulls out of me, coming down on his forearms.
You warned me. You said one time with you wouldn't be enough. You said you were like a drug. But you failed to tell me you were the most addictive kind.
Chapter 10. Can I ask you a personal question? Elisa nods as she perfects a bouquet of flowers about to go out for delivery. We're 3 days away from our grand opening, and it just keeps getting busier by the day. What is it? Elisa asks, facing me. She leans into the counter and starts picking at her fingernails. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, I warn.
Well, I can't answer it if you don't ask it.
That's a good point. Do you and Marshall donate to charity? Confusion crosses her face, and she says, Yeah. Why? I shrug. I was just curious. I wouldn't judge you or anything. I've just been thinking lately about how I might like to start a charity.
What kind of charity? She asks.
We donate to a few different ones now that we have money, but my favorite is this one we got involved with last year. They build schools in other countries. We funded 3 new constructions in the past year alone. I knew I liked her for a reason. I don't have that kind of money, obviously, but I'd like to do something. I just don't know what yet.
Let's get through this grand opening first, and then you can start thinking about philanthropy. One dream at a time, Lily.
She walks around the corner and grabs the trash can. I watch as she pulls the full bag out of it and ties it in a knot. It makes me wonder why, if she has people for everything, she would even want a job where she had to take out the trash and get her hands dirty. Why do you work here? I ask her. She glances up at me and smiles. Because I like you, she says. But then I notice the smile completely leave her eyes right before she turns and walks toward the back to throw out the trash. When she comes back, I'm still watching her curiously. I say it again. Elisa, why do you work here? She stops what she's doing and takes in a slow breath like maybe she's contemplating being honest with me. She walks back to the counter and leans against it, crossing her feet at her ankles. Because, she says, looking down at her feet, I can't get pregnant. We've been trying for 2 years, but nothing has worked. I was tired of sitting at home crying all the time, so I decided I should find something to keep my mind busy. She stands up straight and wipes her hands across her jeans. And you, Lily Bloom, are keeping me very busy. She turns and starts messing with the same bouquet of flowers again. She's been perfecting them for half an hour. She picks up a card and stuffs it in the flowers, and then turns around and hands me the vase. These are for you, by the way. It's obvious Elisa wants to change the subject, so I take the flowers from her. What do you mean? She rolls her eyes and waves me off to my office. It's on the card. Go read it. I can tell by her annoyed reaction that they're from Ryle. I grin and run to my office. I take a seat at my desk and pull out the card.
Lily, I'm having serious withdrawals. Ryle.
I smile and put the card back in the envelope. I grab my phone and snap a picture of me holding the flowers with my tongue sticking out. I text it to Ryle. Me. I tried to warn you. He immediately starts texting me back. I watch anxiously as the dots on my phone move back and forth. Ryle.
I need my next fix. I'll be finished here in about 30 minutes. Can I take you to dinner?
Me. Can't. Mom wants me to try a new restaurant with her tonight. She's an obnoxious foodie. Sad face. Ryle.
I like food. I eat food. Where are you taking her?
Me. A place called Bibbs on Marketson. Ryle.
Is there room for one more?
I stare at his text for a moment. He wants to meet my mother? We aren't even officially dating. I mean, I don't care if he meets my mother. She would love him. But he went from not wanting anything to do with relationships to possibly agreeing to test drive one to meeting the parents all within 5 days? Good God. I really am a drug.
Me.
Sure. Meet us there in half an hour. I walk out of my office and straight up to Elisa. I hold my phone in front of her face. He wants to meet my mother.
Who?
Ryle.
My brother,
she says, looking as shocked as I feel. I nod. Your brother. My mother. She grabs my phone and looks at the texts.
Huh. That's so weird.
I take my phone from her hands. Thanks for the vote of confidence. She laughs and says, you know what I mean. It's Ryle we're talking about here. He's never, in the history of being Ryle Kincaid, met a girl's parents. Of course, hearing her say that makes me smile. But then I wonder if maybe he's doing this just to please me. If maybe he's doing things he doesn't really want to do just because he knows I want a relationship. And then I smile even bigger, because isn't that what it's all about? Sacrificing for the person you like so that you can see them happy? Your brother must really like me, I say teasingly. I look back up at Elisa, expecting her to laugh, but there's a solemn look on her face. She nods and says, yeah, I'm afraid he does. She grabs her purse from beneath the counter and says, I'm gonna head out now. Let me know how it goes, okay? She moves past me, and I watch her as she makes her way out the door, and then I just stare at the door for a long time. It bothers me that she doesn't seem excited about the prospect of me dating Ryle. It makes me wonder if that has more to do with her feelings toward me or her feelings toward him. 20 minutes later, I flip the sign to closed. Just a few more days. I lock the door and walk to my car, but stop short when I see someone leaning against it. It takes me a moment to recognize him. He's facing the other direction, talking on his cell phone. I thought he was meeting me at the restaurant, but okay. The horn beeps on my car when I hit the unlock button and Ryle spins around. He grins when he sees me.
Yes, I agree, he says into the phone.
He wraps an arm around my shoulder and pulls me against him, pressing a kiss to the top of my head.
We'll talk about it tomorrow, he says. Something really important just came up.
He hangs up the phone and slides it into his pocket. Then he kisses me. It's not a hello kiss. It's an I've been thinking about you non-stop kiss. He wraps both arms around me and spins me until I'm backed up against my car, where he continues to kiss me until I start to feel dizzy again. When he pulls back, he's looking down at me appreciatively.
You know which part of you drives me the craziest?
He brings his fingers to my mouth and traces my smile.
These,
he says.
Your lips. I love how they're as red as your hair, and you don't even have to wear lipstick.
I grin and kiss his fingers. I better watch you around my mom then, because everyone says we have the same mouth. He pauses his fingers against my lips and he stops smiling.
Lily, just... no.
I laugh and open my door. Are we taking separate cars? He pulls the door open for me the rest of the way and says,
I took an Uber here from work. We'll ride together.
My mother is already seated at a table when we arrive. Her back is to the door as I lead the way. I'm instantly impressed by the restaurant. My eyes are drawn to the warm, neutral colors painted on the walls and the almost full-size tree in the middle of the restaurant. It looks like it's growing straight out of the floor, almost as if the entire restaurant was designed around the tree.
Ryle follows closely behind me with his hand on my lower back. Once we reach the table, I begin to pull off my jacket.
"Hey, Mom."
She looks up from her phone and says, "Oh, hey, honey." She drops her phone in her purse and waves her hand around the restaurant.
"I already love it. Look at the lighting," she says, pointing up.
"The fixtures look like something you'd grow in one of your gardens."
That's when she notices Ryle, who is standing patiently next to me as I slide into the booth.
My mother smiles at him and says, "We'll take two waters for now, please."
My eyes dart to Ryle and then back to my mother.
"Mom, he's with me. He's not the waiter."
She looks up at Ryle again with confusion. He just smiles and reaches out his hand.
"Honest mistake, ma'am. I'm Ryle Kincaid."
She returns the handshake, looking back and forth between us. He releases her hand and slides into the booth. She looks a little flustered when she finally says,
"Jenny Bloom. Nice to meet you."
She places her attention back on me and raises an eyebrow.
"A friend of yours, Lily?"
I can't believe I'm not better prepared for this moment. What in the heck do I introduce him as? My trial run? I can't say boyfriend, but I can't very well say friend. Prospect seems a little dated.
Ryle notices my pause, so he puts his hand on my knee and squeezes reassuringly.
"My sister works for Lily," he says. "Have you met her, Elisa?"
My mother leans forward in her booth and says,
"Oh, yes, of course. You two look so much alike now that you mention it," she says.
"It's the eyes, I think,
and the mouth."
He nods.
"We both favor our mother."
My mother smiles at me.
"People always say they think Lily favors me."
"Yes,"
he says.
"Identical mouths. Uncanny."
Ryle squeezes my knee under the table again while I try and suppress my laughter.
"Ladies, if you'll excuse me, I need to head to the gentleman's room."
He leans in and kisses me on the side of the head before standing.
"If the waiter comes, I'll just take water."
My mother's eyes follow Ryle as he walks away, and then she slowly turns back to me. She points at me and then to his empty seat.
"How come I haven't heard about this guy?"
I smile a little. "Things are kind of... it's not really... I have no idea how to explain our situation to my mother. He works a lot, so we haven't really spent that much time together. At all. This is actually the first time we've been to dinner together."
My mother raises an eyebrow.
"Really?"
she says, leaning back in her seat.
"He sure doesn't treat it like that. I mean, he seems comfortably affectionate with you. Not normal behavior with someone you've just met."
"We didn't just meet," I say. "It's been almost a year since the first time I met him, and we've spent time together, just not on a date. He works a lot."
"Where does he work?"
"Massachusetts General Hospital."
My mother leans forward, and her eyes practically bulge from her head.
"Lily,"
she hisses.
"He's a doctor?"
I nod, suppressing my grin. "A neurosurgeon."
"Can I get you ladies something to drink?"
a waiter asks. "Yeah," I say. "We'll take three..." I stare at the waiter, and the waiter stares back at me. My heart is in my throat. I can't remember how to speak.
"Lily?"
my mother says. She flicks her hand toward the waiter.
"He's waiting for your drink order."
I shake my head and begin to stutter.
"Three waters," my mother says, interrupting my fumbled words.
The waiter snaps out of his trance long enough to tap his pencil on his pad of paper.
"Three waters," he says.
"Got it."
He turns and walks away, but I watch as he glances back at me before pushing through the doors to the kitchen. My mother leans forward and says, "What in the world is wrong with you?" I point over my shoulder. The waiter, I say, shaking my head. He looked exactly like... I'm about to say Atlas Corrigan, when Ryle walks up and slides back into the seat. He glances back and forth between us.
What did I miss?
I swallow hard, shaking my head. Surely that wasn't really Atlas. But those eyes, his mouth. I know it's been years since I saw him, but I'll never forget what he looked like. It had to be him. I know it was, and I know he recognized me, too, because the second our eyes met, it looked like he'd seen a ghost.
Lily?
Ryle says, squeezing my hand.
You okay?
I nod and force a smile, then clear my throat. Yep. We were just talking about you, I say, glancing back at my mother. Ryle assisted in an 18-hour surgery this week. My mother leans forward with interest. Ryle begins to tell her all about the surgery. Our water arrives, but it's a different waiter this time. He asks if we've had a chance to go over the menu and then tells us the chef's specials. The three of us order our food, and I'm doing everything I can to focus, but my attention is all over the restaurant looking for Atlas. I need to regroup. After a few minutes, I lean over to Ryle. I need to run to the restroom. He stands up to let me out, and my eyes are scanning the face of every waiter as I make my way across the room. I push through the door to the hallway that leads to the restrooms. As soon as I'm alone, my back meets the wall of the hallway. I lean forward and release a huge breath. I decide to take a moment and regain my composure before heading back out there. I bring my hands up to my forehead and close my eyes. For 9 years, I've wondered what happened to him. Years.
Lily?
I glance up and suck in a breath. He's standing at the end of the hallway like a ghost straight out of the past. My eyes travel to his feet to make sure he's not suspended in the air. He isn't. He's real, and he's standing right in front of me. I stay pressed against the wall, not sure what to say to him. Atlas? As soon as I say his name, he blows out a quick breath of relief and takes 3 huge steps forward. I catch myself doing the same. We meet in the middle and throw our arms around each other.
Holy shit,
he says, holding me in a tight embrace. I nod. Yeah, holy shit. He puts his hands on my shoulders and takes a step back to look at me.
You haven't changed at all.
I cover my mouth with my hand, still in shock, and give him the once-over. His face looks the same, but he's no longer the scrawny teenager I remember. I can't say the same for you. He looks down at himself and laughs.
Yeah, he says. 8 years in the military will do that to you.
We're both in shock, so nothing is said right after that. We just keep shaking our heads in disbelief. He laughs, and then I laugh. Finally, he releases my shoulders and folds his arms over his chest.
What brings you to Boston?
He asks. He says it so casually, and I'm thankful for that. Maybe he doesn't remember our conversation all those years ago about Boston, which would save me a lot of embarrassment. I live here, I say, forcing my answer to sound as casual as his question. I own a flower shop over on Park Plaza. He smiles knowingly, like it doesn't at all surprise him. I glance toward the door, knowing I should get back out there. He notices and then takes another step back. He holds my gaze for a moment, and it gets really quiet. Way too quiet. There's so much to say, but neither of us even knows where to start. The smile leaves his eyes for a moment, and then he motions toward the door.
You should probably get back to your company, he says. I'll look you up sometime. You said Park Plaza, right?
I nod. He nods.
The door swings open and a woman walks in holding a toddler. She moves between us, which puts even more distance between us. I take a step toward the door, but he remains in the same spot. Before I walk out, I turn back to him and smile. It was really good to see you, Atlas. He smiles a little, but it doesn't touch his eyes.
Yeah. You too, Lily.
I'm mostly quiet for the rest of the meal. I'm not sure Ryle or my mother even notice, though, because she's having no issue firing question after question at him. He takes it like a champ. He's very charming with my mother in all the right ways. Unexpectedly running into Atlas tonight put such a wrinkle in my emotions, but by the end of dinner, Ryle has smoothed them back out again. My mother takes her napkin and wipes her mouth, then points at me.
New favorite restaurant, she says. Incredible.
Ryle nods.
I agree. I need to bring Elisa here. She loves trying new restaurants.
The food really is good, but the last thing I need is for either of these two to want to come back here. It was okay, I say. He pays for our meals, of course, and then insists we walk my mother to her car. I can already tell she'll be calling me about him tonight, simply by the prideful look on her face. Once she's gone, Ryle walks me to my car.
I requested an Uber so you wouldn't have to go out of your way to take me home. We have approximately...
He looks down at his phone.
1.5 minutes to make out.
I laugh. He wraps his arms around me and kisses my neck first, and then my cheek.
I would invite myself over, but I have an early surgery tomorrow, and I'm sure my patient would appreciate it if I didn't spend the majority of the night inside you.
I kiss him back, both disappointed and relieved he's not coming over. I have a grand opening in a few days. I should probably sleep, too.
When's your next day off?
He says. Never. When's yours?
Never.
I shake my head. We're doomed. There's just too much drive and success between the two of us.
That means the honeymoon phase will last until we're 80,
he says.
I'll come to your grand opening Friday, and then the four of us will go out and celebrate.
A car pulls up beside us, and he wraps his hand in my hair and kisses me goodbye.
Your mother is wonderful, by the way. Thank you for letting me come to dinner.
He backs away and climbs inside the car. I watch as it pulls out of the parking lot. I have a really good feeling about that man. I smile and turn toward my car, but throw a hand up to my chest and gasp when I see him. Atlas is standing at the rear of my car.
Sorry. Wasn't trying to scare you.
I blow out a breath. Well, you did. I lean against the car, and Atlas stays where he is, 3 feet away from me. He looks out at the street.
So, who's the lucky guy?
He's... My voice falters. This is all so weird. My chest is still constricted and my stomach is flipping, and I can't tell if it's leftover nerves from kissing Ryle or if it's the presence of Atlas. His name is Ryle. We met about a year ago. I instantly regret saying we met that long ago. It makes it sound like Ryle and I have been dating that long and we aren't even officially dating. What about you? Married? Have a girlfriend? I'm not sure if I'm asking to extend the conversation he started or if I'm genuinely curious.
I do, actually. Her name is Cassie. We've been together almost a year now.
Heartburn. I think I have heartburn. A year? I place my hand on my chest and nod. That's good. You seem happy. Does he seem happy? I have no idea.
Yeah, well... I'm really glad I got to see you, Lily.
He turns around to walk away, but then spins and faces me again, his hands shoved in his back pockets.
I will say, I kind of wish this could have happened a year ago.
I wince at his words, trying not to let them penetrate. He turns and walks back toward the restaurant. I fumble with my keys and hit the button to unlock the car. I slide in and pull the door shut, gripping the steering wheel. For whatever